You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Nathan Zagura, the notorious VIC, Vic Carucci here on a Therapy Monday after the Browns season started, unfortunately, like so many others have started in recent memory with a loss at home. We are going to get some, I'm sure, growls from the dog pound today, 216-578-0850. And Vic, I know that you're going to be off-site tomorrow with another one of those excellent opportunities for the fans to come out and interact.
Yeah, looking forward to it, actually. Despite what happened yesterday, you know, we go on here and we're going to talk Browns football and be with you over at the PNC Bank tailgate party in Mentor, at the Mentor PNC. We want you to be there and join us. And we are going to have Travis Benjamin be part of this tailgate. He'll be on the air with us between 1:30 and 2:30 on the show. Sam Ratigliano, former Browns coach, will also be on hand, not on this show because he's coming there afterward around 3:30, and then from 5 to 6 p.m., Craig Robertson, Browns linebacker, will be on hand to sign autographs and be available to take pictures and all that stuff. Again, that's tomorrow. The Browns Daily Show, 1 to 3 p.m., its usual spot. It's the PNC Bank at 7940 Plaza Boulevard in Mentor. Be there. Calls. We got calls to 216-578-0850, 216-578-0850. Let's go to Brian in Dayton. Brian, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Could be better, Brian, like the rest of us. Yeah,
I'm with you. Love your show, guys. Listen to you every day.
Thanks.
I just had three things that like were mind-numbingly frustrating yesterday. One, Nate, you already touched on it with the offensive line. O'Neal Cousins, oh my goodness. I could not believe it. Trent Richardson being on the sideline on like fourth downs and third downs, didn't really understand that a whole lot. And Greg Little, oh my gosh.
A lot of oh my gosh, yeah.
Oh my
Cousins
gosh.
Struggled, little struggle.
I mean, I'm trying to keep it radio friendly.
No, thank you. We appreciate that.
Appreciate
Vic,
that.
I have a question for you about that as well, because that was one of the things that struck me when watching the game yesterday, is how many times on third down Trent Richardson was not in the game and Chris Obanaya was as the single back there. And I was under the impression that Trent Richardson was going to be playing on third downs. Yeah. And I think that taking him off the field, again, whether he's, you know, on the road to ever being in the same sentence as Adrian Peterson or not, he still seems to me to be the best player we have on offense. So I was a little bit surprised that he wasn't on the field in those key situations as well.
The only thing I'm going with there is the blocking option that you get from Obanaya that the coaching staff apparently feels is better than it is with Richardson. That's the only place I can go with that, and that might be a little bit of a reach. I mean, at some point, you've got to decide with your running back that he can handle everything you want. And sure, situationally, if you want to do something with Obanaya, great. But I'm with you. Keeping him on the field as often as possible would seem to be a good thing. And my understanding about him and your understanding about him is that he is one of the best players that the Browns have offensively. If we think Josh Gordon is the best overall athlete, great. But Richardson, you would think, would be on the field a lot more.
Yeah, and that surprised me. And you look at, listen, 15 touches for Trent Richardson in a game without Josh Gordon, which is what it ultimately all added up to, is not enough. And whether it be as a runner or you want to use him in the pass game a little more, he did get six targets. Now, they were only able to connect on two of them. I think he's just got to be out there. So that was one of the things that really struck me that was frustrating. I just want to add one little bit of perspective to everything while we're, you know, a little bit down, understandably so. The Browns are in first place. Thank you.
Yeah, good perspective. The entire AFC North loses.
The best division in football goes
0-4. Losing is winning in this scenario. Okay. Phil in Brecksville, I know, doesn't agree with that, but hey, Phil.
Hey, Nathan, that dog just don't hunt, man. I tell you, that comment, was a tough one.
It was a joke. He reached. He was kidding.
It was a joke.
Right. You know, I didn't call – just three quick things. First of all, on Trent Richardson, which I didn't call about, but I'm starting to think that he was the third best back in that draft behind the Tampa Bay back and the Washington back, and I would have never thought that. Second thing is I think the quarterback position, I think they made a decision at the beginning of the year, as evidenced by they brought three quarterbacks in of the same skill set and pretty much making about the same amount of money. No developmental quarterback, no slash and bash kind of person. I think they decided there wasn't anybody in the draft. They were going to use one of these three, and then they were going to go on. The last thing that I wanted you guys to comment on is really, Nathan, you said the problems that we had, we knew about. Corner, safety, right guard. My problem is that Joe Banner and Mike Lombardi were under the salary cap. This isn't basketball or baseball where there are guaranteed contracts. They could have easily went out and filled these positions and didn't. And this goes back to Joe Banner and Mike Lombardi just being on the plan. And please don't tell me that it's their plan, because Vic plans teams. So I'm just interested in what you guys have to say.
Thank you for the call, Phil.
I will say this. The four sacks all generated by people brought in by Joe Banner and Mike Lombardi yesterday. Two for Desmond Bryant, one for Quentin Groves, one for Paul Kruger. So they did make some moves that had a meaningful impact on the field
dividends
in
yes.
week number one. Now, I would agree with you that I personally, outside of the decision makers here, think that cornerback needed to be better addressed. I do. I think that that is an important position. I think that, you know, having only four cornerbacks on the roster right now puts some pressure on that position, forces people who might not be completely ready to play to play. We see Buster Skrine still on the outside, has problems. And that was something that was apparent last year. It was in the bottom 10 in the league in terms of, you know, yards allowed, touchdowns allowed, penalties called. Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't address cornerback, but they felt that perhaps they didn't want to pay $5 million a year to one of those veteran quarterbacks.
And I just want to insert this, and you can continue with your point, but Brent Grimes was the guy they did pursue, and I think they were offering Grimes. I don't know that they weren't competitive with the offer. They flew him in. Remember, he was coming back from an injury. It sounded like they were satisfied with his healing process from his injury in Atlanta, and Grimes ends up with the Dolphins. So that's a guy who either made a value judgment or a decision. As I understood it, they flew him in, I think, on a private plane, had his family with him, hung out at the facility. Joe Banner had talked about this and didn't close that deal. So the effort was made in their mind to pursue the best that they saw out there in the market who could help them, and that was Brent Grimes. I don't know if there was another guy that they should have gotten or could have gotten that would have made things better. You know, the answer to a lot of people would be anybody would have been better,
sure,
than like Buster Skrine struggling as much as he did and on, and Chris Owens not being – I mean, Chris had trouble clearly with some missed tackles. You saw that.
Sure.
And Leon McFadden is a guy still, I guess, finding his way. I mean, that's the only way to – well, you could put it a different
and
way.
And you could say you use a third-round pick at that position.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it does not seem to be a third-round pick ready to make an impact immediately, which I think many people would want to get from that spot in the draft.
Yeah, especially given your circumstances,
yes,
where you don't have another answer. Scott in Bombay, Florida is joining us now. Hey, Scott.
Hey, how are you? Well, I didn't mean to say how are you because I already knew. I'm sorry.
That's
Thank
all right,
you, Scott.
But I did have a few things that I wanted to touch on, and a lot of them you guys already did. But to me, it doesn't matter if there's eight in the box. You can still push the running game because that does help protect your quarterback. Eventually, they just put their ears back and didn't care about the running game and were just trying to kill the quarterback, and then everybody rags on Wheaton. I just say that.
Okay.
The other thing is I know you guys said you thought the defense was awesome and great. I think it was good. But, you know, Miami took advantage and got some interceptions that were pretty incredible. We could have had four interceptions, and we had one. We had some that we were in our hands, and we dropped. Hayden, Ward, and Craig Robertson.
True.
And then no one would be saying how great Pantyhill was today. Because
he took advantage of the deficiencies in our coverage. I think he was intelligent and attacked the deficiencies that we had and executed on those plays. We had some opportunities to make plays, like when Hartline put that double move on Buster. That was a perfectly thrown ball by Ryan Tannehill, and it led to a touchdown. We had some opportunities for big plays as well and didn't get those perfectly thrown balls or the clean pockets that allow the quarterback to feel comfortable enough to make those perfectly thrown balls.
Scott makes a fair point, again, about the defense that needed to close and finish up some plays as well. I don't think anybody was pounding their chests, really, from a defensive standpoint and saying, well, we did our job. I'm just making this observation, and you're making the same observation, that it's that kind of defensive performance that does give you a chance to win, even if you're not great offensively. You don't have to be great, but you've got to be obviously a lot more efficient than the Browns were. And the point we're making is the offense found a way to play poorly enough to squander what was a good enough defensive showing to give them a chance to win.
In the National Football League, it is not often that you go into halftime winning the football game after turning the ball over three times in the first half. That does not happen very often. So when you think about that and you think about the fact that, you know, the Browns had every opportunity to win this game.
Yeah.
They should have won this game. They were minus two in the turnover battle in the first half alone. Now, they capitalized. They got an interception. They drove down the field. Touchdown to Jordan Cameron. I'm just saying every opportunity was there to win this game. When you go minus two in the turnovers in the first half and are leading, that means you should be able to capitalize and bring it home in the second half. You're lucky to be there.
216-578-0850 on this Therapy Monday, and we need as much therapy as you do. 216-578-0850, but we're here to help each other, right? I mean, that's the deal. And you tweet us at Browns_daily. John in Tippecanoe on the line with us. Hey, John.
Call. Hey, I don't mean to call in and pile on because, I mean, everybody's frustrated today, but just two things that really struck me. You know, our offensive line got good national press, good national recognition. I mean, that's supposed to be one of the strengths of our team. And, yeah, they put eight in the box and they did this, they did that, but it's like our quarterback, I mean, even our quarterback, I mean, I read in the paper today, was quoted, and it was a quote, you know, he's never been hit that much in a football game. And secondly, it to me, it doesn't look like the receivers, I mean, yes, the, you know, the plays are drawn up and they're supposed to do what they're supposed to do, but when they're coming after your quarterback, you got to work for your quarterback. You got to think outside the box, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't seem like we did that yesterday, whether it was from the play calling or just the players making the best of a bad situation, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So,
yes, we hear you, and thank you for the call, John. Rob Chudzinski dealt with that, or addressed that, I should say, today. We'll hear from him during the course of the show, some sound from his news conference today. But on the issue of just what you were talking about, are there some things that can be done to help with protection, especially with the chore getting every bit, and it won't get easier, it could even be more difficult when you go up against Terrell Suggs and this Ravens pass rush, Elvis Dumervil and company, on Sunday in Baltimore. And he said, you know, there's some things you can do scheme-wise with your blocking scheme, but you also have to just coach up and make this about technique, make this about players playing better.
And yes, the line was good last year. We talked early in the preseason how this offense allowed pressure on the quarterback just 27% of dropbacks last year. You have to also remember that that was in a different offense that asked the offensive linemen to keep people off the quarterback for a shorter duration of time. This offense is asking them to block a little bit longer and do a better job. They went against a team that can get to the quarterback, obviously, with Cameron Wake and the Miami Dolphins. And 16 hits. No quarterback in the NFL was hit as many times as Brandon Weeden was hit yesterday.
Right.
Six sacks, 16 hits. Nobody took a bigger beating than Brandon Weeden. So I don't put all the blame on him. I think that they had inadequacies at wide receiver, inadequacies on the offensive line. I would like Brandon Weeden to be better. Were there plays to be made? Yes. And, but at the same time, he got beaten up pretty good.
But those stats don't tell this. The number equation is great, and it's comparison to the rest of the league. What they don't say is when a quarterback, and I'm not here to beat up on Brandon either, add to his beating, but indecision, when you've got time, can also lead to hits that, I mean, you're going to get, those hits don't tell you when they get hit. Does he get hit, like, with no chance to drop back? It wasn't a case where Brandon was taking two or three steps and had someone in his face constantly. That wasn't what the game I saw. I saw a guy who had time at times and was still not making, you know, prompt decisions, looking decisive. Again, I'm not saying it was all on him. And, yes, this line didn't do its part, especially the right side of it didn't do its part to help him out as much as it needed to. But there were moments, in many moments that I saw, where I just thought he was not when he goes bang bang, when he goes back, knows where he's going with the ball and throws it, that's when he's at his best.
Agreed.
When he's dropping back, thinking, looking, thinking, that's when issues come into play, including getting hit. And thirdly, we didn't mention this, the ball's getting batted down too. He's still in that flow, still in that pattern of passes that get rejected at the line. And why does that happen? You know, is that a technique thing that you work through? But that we saw that as a problem last year. We're seeing it as a problem now. All right, we're going to have more for this from the show for you. More. We're going to have a roundtable discussion with Tom Withers from the Associated Press joining us. Doug Deacon from the Browns Radio Network is going to be up here as well. So we're looking forward to having the two of them and yours truly, Vic Carucci, with Nathan Zagura to hash this game out. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.